WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. As we bring you into some great conversations, not only here on 95.9 WATD, but on the radio dial, as we have different types of conversations. And this particular show, we will focus on a couple of different topics. We will also celebrate Women's History Month and International Women's Day, which I know was last week, but many of our guests... our women, and we will talk with them about what is going on. My first set of guests, they're already here joining me, Raina Camacho with the Coalition for Social Justice and Kalik Williams with the Community Labor United here to chat as we're going to talk a little bit about some legislation that's ongoing, transit in crisis. And we're going to talk about that for our very first conversation. And then we're going to have Megan Driscoll. We're going to have a conversation with her in regards to the meeting that they had this morning. And this is in regards to the Wage Equity Now Coalition. Megan is a champion when it comes to fair equity. And we've had her on the show many times. If you check into our podcast, we've had lengthy conversations about her work, working in tandem with State Rep Josh Cutler. And we look forward to an update, a full update from her as to what took place today up at the State House. Hour number two, we will speak with the folks from Abington Copes. Folks think just because the COVID came and went that addiction and folks who are fighting with trying to find ways to cope. Well, it so happens that we have Melissa Cook and Jeff Chasen. They are on the board of directors for Abington Copes as they are helping those who are in need and get the message out and get the word out in regards to folks who are dealing with substance issues. And then we'll close things out with Corinne Mason and Devaney Grafton. They are with the Massasoit Theater Company's Student Ensemble, and we will talk about Little Women. That's coming up this Saturday, not only at, I think it's 2 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, but you can go to the website, massasoit.edu/boxoffice, and we can talk more about that.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
So joining us is Kalik Williams and Raina Camacho. We're here to talk a little bit about what's going on when it comes to transportation, affordable transportation. Raina, Kalik, welcome back.
Thank you, Kevin.
This isn't the first time you guys have been here.
No,
it's
great
to be back, too. What's new? It's a new legislative session, and I would think that you are already back up at the State House, and you're already speaking with legislators about what needs to be done when it comes to affordable transportation.
Absolutely, hitting the ground running.
So I know you, Raina, wanted to kind of share a little bit of something to start things off, as I know Kalika is going to probably give us the meat and potatoes of what our topic is. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So the floor is yours.
Why, thank you, Kevin. So I'm Raina Camacho. I'm from the Coalition of Social Justice Education Fund. I do some grassroots work in Brockton, Randolph, and Quincy on transportation. As you said, Kevin, the MBTA is in crisis. You know, Massachusetts needs equitable, affordable, safe, and reliable transit. The Coalition for Social Justice Education Fund has partnered with Community Labor United to focus on low-income fare, public transit public good campaign. We're focusing together to push forward low-income fare legislation, a bill filed and sponsored by Representative Adrian Madaro and Senator Lydia Edwards, some great people, which works to put dollars back into the hands of public transportation riders who need it most. The bill requests that Massachusetts Bay Transportation authorities implement a low-income fare program to provide free or discounted transit fares to those who have been disproportionately affected by COVID, along with low-income families who meet the financial criteria. Kevin, the transit crisis has disproportionately impacted low and fixed income families, marginalized communities, our elderly, our youth, single families, and also our working class families. And we know that transit fares are a barrier to access. Without access, you know, our elderly can't get to their appointments, people can't get to hospitals, our youth can't get to schools. We also know that the cost of transportation has risen faster than inflation. Now, isn't that crazy? So low-income fares would direct the MBTA to start a permanent discounted fare program for low-income people. It would also open a path for regional transit authorities to institute reduced fare programs or free fare systems, extending the benefits of transit and affordability throughout the Commonwealth, which is awesome. Massachusetts needs sustainable and equitable fares that do not threaten mobility or job security, which is really, really important to our communities. And we want to make sure that that's resonating with people and people are hearing that. Low-income fares would put funds back into the pockets of those most vulnerable who need it most while increasing mobility. Because let's be honest, no one should have to choose between transportation and a hot meal on the table. Mm-hmm. We know that riders are the lifeblood of our system. And because of that, we need safe, reliable, equitable, accessible public transportation. And that's why we need you and we need people who are listening in.
I've been following what's going on with the new administration. And I thought, you know, low and equitable, fares when it comes to at least the MBTA, that was something that's already in the works with this administration. Is this something that is in the works?
So this administration has been super supportive mm-hmm. of a low-income fare. The governor's budget, which recently came out 2 weeks ago,
yep.
There's a $5 million line item to move a low-income fare. So we are excited and hopeful to start to move that with MBTA. But as we know, that's got to get through the House and it's got to get through the Senate. Right.
So it's got to make it into the final bill that's signed
exactly.
at the end of June or early July.
Exactly. So what it's still going to take the work of folks like us at Public Transit Public Good, the work of you and the work of our listeners and folks that are like in the Commonwealth that use and need the MBTA. We have to make sure that we're calling our legislators, making sure that we're telling them that they need to co-sponsor these bills so that it gets through both the House and the Senate
right.
And makes it to the final budget, right? Because the governor can put out what she wants. Like, you know, that's the roadmap. Yep. And then the legislature can be like, well, we're going to make a little detour. So we don't want them to detour. We want them to get off the exit that we want to get off at.
Well, you already have. So there's a House Bill 3417, Senate Bill 1550.
Yep.
And these are acts to establish this program. And this is something that would be funded. Is that the hope is? What's the language of these respective bills? Because we know that the House could put in a bill and it could be starkly different than what the Senate does.
Yes. Both the language and both of these bills are actually pretty identical.
Okay.
We've had champions like Adrian Madaro that Raina talked about and Senator Edwards. We've come together and we're like this is the language that needs to be in it. So it says that there needs to be a low-income fare. There needs to be a path for RTAs to have something similar, not necessarily the same. It needs to fit what needs to fit for the RTAs, but the
regional transit authorities.
Sorry, yeah. Thank you, regional transit authorities.
So folks at home, just for those at home, because I at home somebody will spit out an acronym like what? What was that?
Sometimes I got to stop being a walk. That's what it is.
All it's all good. Again, just trying to make sure we're putting forth the best conversation on the radio.
And I appreciate that. So, but yes, the regional transit authorities will have their own mode that's going to be like, you know, work for them. But for the MBTA, we're saying that there needs to be a low income fare that's, like Raina said, will be 50% of the fare or something around that nature. And I mean, honestly, what we're talking about this is we're talking about like 60,000 people will have an hit the ground running, be able to have more affordable transit. We're talking about something like $500 yearly back into the pockets of folks that need it. Hmm. We're talking about folks that have a need for paratransit, because it's not just the bus and rapid transit. We're talking about the commuter rail. We're talking about paratransit. We're talking about hopefully like the ferry and things of that nature. So like whatever mode folks are taking, they'll get that break that they need.
So what kind of support is this, are these measures receiving? Is it receiving decent support? Is this something that you feel you're going to have to push to have a large number of signatures or co-sponsors for these bills?
You know, it's always good to have a lot more support. Mm. But I will say this, in the last two sessions, this has made it through pretty far.
It's made it through committee.
Last session, it made it through committee. The session before that, it made it to the bond bill, and it was vetoed, unfortunately, by Governor Baker at the time. And then last year, it made it through committee, and, you know, folks were kicking around, and then, you know, it was a little dicey what was going on with the sea, and folks were like, maybe we'll pull back and try to figure out what's happening and how to staunch the quote-unquote bleeding, I guess. This year, there's support of the governor, and we expect to have, you know, the same level of support that we've had. I think with the push from the general public, it'll it'll just shore up the idea that this needs to be supported.
Would you like to weigh in on this? Give me your thoughts as far as, especially down you when we look around the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and knowing that there are communities that may not necessarily need this, but there are gateway communities that have individuals who are on fixed incomes that could use this.
Totally. I think it's just a really important piece of legislation, you know. It's hard listening to the stories out there, you know. I heard a story just the other day where an elderly woman was unable to make an important, doctor's appointment because she just was unable to afford the transportation bill. And, you know, that's unfortunate, too, because if we're not experiencing it ourselves, we tend to think it's not a problem, but there are people out there that are suffering, you know, especially our elderly are on fixed incomes. They're very, very tight. You know, it's hard to have an additional $50 left over, you know, to pay for, additional things. And our youth, they're having a hard time. And not just that, there are some serious issues that are happening. It's not safe. There's been a lot of changes, and the MBTA is doing their best. They're doing a great job trying to fix things, but we do know, you know, some of the lines are still slow and might have taken a student 45 minutes to get to school. Some of them, it's now taking 2 hours to get to school, you know, so.
Well, you get they've slowed down.
It's totally
how fast the trains
down.
Are and
yes.
As there are issues.
And they implemented
the
fixing of the trains and, you know, doing all this work right before school started. So it really threw a wrench into the system. But, you know, I feel like being out there, and I think Khalid can affirm that, you know, we're getting great responses, especially from legislators and, you know, people alike. And so I'm excited about it. I think this time we're going all the way. And we were super happy and kind of celebrated, you know, seeing the governor's budget and you know, how she's embracing, transportation. It's something that should be on everyone's radar right now.
But how many of her initiatives are going to make? I mean, this is a $55.5 billion spending package for the fiscal year 24. And some of it is for, you know, for community college for folks.
And it's a
25.
Pilot program.
You know, she's looking to tackle multiple initiatives, not only housing, but the MBTA. And folks who, you know, try to find ways to keep folks here in Massachusetts and help better educate some of the folks who might not only have a high school education, and maybe they might just have a certificate, you know, program that they went to be able to be an EMT, you know, trying to better educate folks so that they have a better wage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would say this. This is not like something that's popped up and this is new, right? This is before, even before she was the governor-elect,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
That she had made that. Made it known that this was a priority. And there's been, what do you call it? There's been a lot of movement around making sure that MBTA is better. There's a robust search going on for the GM. They've put in a new Secretary of Transportation, Gina Fiandaca. She's fantastic. We've met with her Undersecretary, Monica Tibbetts-Nutt. These are folks that actually care about making sure that folks can move around the MBTA in an affordable manner. And we'll also say that the MBTA, you know, their staff team and folks have, like, have also been pretty supportive. This goes to the board in terms of talking about what this low-income fare could look like at the next public board meeting on March 23rd. And the board will talk about it, and they'll look at their preliminary budget for the year. But this is also one of those places where we're going to have to fight and push for this, right? Like, folks want to do it, and they need to know that there is support of the public for them to go ahead and do it. Like, if we're going to talk about spending this money, if we're going to talk about spending these dollars, we got to know that the citizens are behind spending this money and spending these dollars. And I think we can make that loud noise to be like, yeah, we agree. Go ahead.
Well said.
See, I think the thing, though, is that may concern folks is our economy. And it's long been threatened that our economy is slowing down. And when your economy slows down, it means that people are spending less. And that means that people are conserving more. And then what do? You worry about that. Now, I'm going to ask you, what if this does happen to make it through the committee, right? Is there any concern that this could be stripped down? Because a lot of times when they bundle a bill, they're going to strip it down. Hey, we gave you what you wanted. It may come in a pared down version. Is that acceptable?
So I don't know if they would really, like, this is like when we talk about this $5 million, it is significant, and it's a good amount to go ahead and get this thing started.
Yep.
And it is, I think it, if I remember correctly, it's like, I don't know, 2% of the MBTA budget. Like, it's a drop in the bucket. There, I don't think that they would actually really try to pare this down,
sure.
Right? And this is something that, you know, is to help get us started and kind of like a little bit of the proving ground to be like, this isn't something that's going to work. All the data says it's going to work. Now we need to kind of put the money where the mouth is and start to move it to prove that theory.
What's the provision if this in fact does pass? How will it be enacted, and how would somebody be able to apply for such programs like this?
So part of the idea is that we're going to be that the MBTA needs to partner with groups like Health and Human Services to make sure that folks can be verified that they qualify. But if you qualify for things like Medicare or Mass Health or things of that nature, you will qualify for this. The idea is to partner with partner organizations and places of that nature. So similar to like how we have in the Youth Pass, where you can go to like neighborhood places, places like Green Roots in Chelsea, and like actually go ahead and be like, I have need. Here's my paperwork. And you can get a card.
And this would be something that the RTAs would be able to also assist with, whether it's GATRA, BAT, whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And again, for the RTAs, it would be depending on if they need a discounted pass or if they need to go fare-free, because that is an option for some of those RTAs too, because sometimes it actually might cost them more to administrate, to actually do that work to make it, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking. The voice you just heard, that was Kalik Williams. He is with Community Labor United, as well as Irina Camacho. She is with the Coalition for Social Justice.
Education Fund.
And she is also the Brockton North Grassroots Coordinator.
Indeed.
How many visits have you each taken up to the State House to discuss this and talk about this? And is there anything additional that we want to make we get out there to the folks who are tuned in?
Well, I think, well, we made tons of visits, and I think it's really important to talk about how people can get involved, right? So on the 15th of each month, the Coalition for Social Justice Education Fund holds a transit hour from 6 to 7 via Zoom, and this is just like a great way for to have your voice heard, to learn more about the low-income failed bill, and ways on how you can obviously get involved. Speaking of heading up to the State House on April 10th, we'll be, in conjunction with Public Transit Public Good, we'll be holding a lobby day from 11 to 2. So that should be lots of fun. And, you know, no job is too big or small if none of those events, you know, if people can't make it, you can always assist by signing a petition, which we just ran a co-sponsorship campaign recently, and I'm sure there'll be more. So you can always assist by signing a petition, writing a letter to the editor, participating in a low-income fair hearing. You know, there's so many different ways, phone banking, canvassing, and more importantly, calling your local legislator and asking he or she to co-sponsor the bill. That is super, super important for us. If anybody has any questions, we could obviously be reached. I can be reached at thecoalitionforsocialjustice.org. I can give out my email if you'd like that.
Sure.
And also, Kalik is with Public Transit Public Good.org. Public Transit Public Good.org. And yeah, so I am R. Camacho at coalitionforsocialjustice.org.
And if, what if folks want to get that Zoom link that you have on the 15th of the month? How can they do that?
Right on, you can just go to our Facebook page.
And your Facebook page is what again?
It's the Coalition for Social Justice.
Okay, just want to make sure that we get it out there. One of the things that I also a little small side focus to this show also is it is Women's History Month. And I want to get individually your thoughts on Women's History Month and how do you feel the fight for women? You know, who are some of your heroes? Who would you say are some of your heroes?
I think Maya Angelou would be like one of my great heroes. You know, she just had her ear to the ground when it came to you know, issues that are you know, really big in our community. But I think that, you know, women have come a long way, but there's also more work to be done.
Like what?
You know, just rights in terms of, like, if a woman has a baby, you know, how much time she can get off of work for that. I recently went to the airport, and there was no, I hate to say it, I'm sure you could agree with me, there was no tampons in the bathroom. Do you know what I mean? And that happens in a lot of places. These are things that happen to women, you know, monthly. But I just think in terms of, you know, even our pay, you know, we do a lot of work, and we don't get compensated for what we should be getting compensated for. And we are heroes. We are heroes on the job. We are heroes in our homes. We are heroes in our communities. You know, the job never ends with us. And so, you know, like I said, we've come a long way, but there's a lot more work to be done. And I just want to celebrate all those beautiful women out there, you know, working hard to just be a woman.
Yeah, no doubt. I am not a woman, but I definitely appreciate
super obvious. But okay.
I definitely appreciate women, especially, you know, folks. As I grew up as a organizer, I've been doing this since I was 13 years old. But one of the, I think, one women in history that I was taught about was Fannie Lou Hamer, and you know, during the civil rights movement, she was like an everyday person, and like Dr. King and folks came through, and they were like, you know, we're looking for people to talk. And she was like, well, like, you give me a platform, I'm going to go ahead and say something. And I think that is, you know, indicative of what it really means to, like, you know, to make change. You don't necessarily have to have all the words. You don't have to be eloquent. You don't need to know exactly what the right thing is to say. But you got to know that you want to say something and you want to make change. And I think that is one woman that has shown, like Cootie Cole, has taught me that as I like read and learn about her. And there are women in my everyday life that I take that same lesson from. So, yeah.
Well said. Definitely well said. Kalik Williams, Raina Camacho, our guest, our first guest. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, and, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Love Absolutely. To have you guys come back.
Absolutely.
With any updates that you may have
Thanks.
In regards to, you know, fair transportation and how these bills do.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
You got it. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, Megan Driscoll's on board.
This
is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We return here on Monday Night Talk, 95.9 WATD.
Miss any episode, you tune in to check out the podcast. You can get them on the website, 959WATD.com. Go to podcasts. Check us out on Podbean. Here's on Spotify. Many, many more coming platforms. So we look to get the word out as to some of the conversations, the great conversations we have right here on Monday Night Talk. And joining me right now, I learned something during the break, and that is, as I was saying it all wrong, I didn't realize that it was an acronym, the WEN Coalition.
It is.
The WEN, without the H, of course. Wage Equality Now. And Megan Driscoll is here. Megan has been here multiple times. Actually, you probably hear the conversations on the podcast website, over 1,100 podcasts. She's one of them. She's probably like 4 or 5 of them.
I'm a big podcast fan, too, in general. So I've listened to quite a few of your podcasts.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Yeah, you're doing a good job.
Before we get into the meat and potatoes of what you did today, the big meeting that took place up at the State House, legislative briefing.
Yes.
It is Women's History Month. And I asked Raina the question. I ask you the question. What does, when you hear Women's History Month, what comes to mind? Who are your heroes when it comes to great women and women who have led the way for things where, you know what, all should be fair and equal, but it's not.
No, it's not. I actually feel for the first time in a long time pretty frustrated this Women's History Month. Like, there's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. And so, you know, I want to be celebrated and I want to celebrate those before us, and I want to be in a place that, but ultimately what I want to do is be in a better place for our daughters, you know. And when you think about, you know, interestingly enough, one of the people that I've been working most closely with is the former Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Murphy, who I think was the first elected female in the state of Massachusetts. And that was only like 20 some odd or 30 some odd years ago. And, you know, she has been such a mentor to me, working with her so closely over the last 6 months on these two pieces of wage equity legislation. And she's been at this her entire life, working towards wage equality. You know, that's unfortunate, you know, and it's like, in honor of her and the work that she's done, it's like, we have to take action now. We have to do things. We have to hold ourselves and everyone else accountable. We are all participating in the reason why we got to this place where women, people of color, are earning a significantly amount less. And it's unfair.
It's interesting that some of the data that you sent me, some of it that I was able to compile. When you look at a male right? Mail for the dollar for dollar.
Dollar for dollar.
What it is, how it scales to what all women make. Certain women of culture, race, creed, how it's much lower than, you know, 100% of what a male would get or receive.
So the numbers in Massachusetts are for every dollar a white man earns, women earn 76 cents or so. When you break it out by race and gender, you get kind of even worse. You get to like 54 cents black women against a white man's dollar, around 50 cents for Latinas. It kind of goes down the rain from there. If you were to compare it to black men and women combined together, they're at about 68 cents on a white man's dollar. For comparing that back and forth, you know, it's unequal. It's been unequal, and unfortunately, in Massachusetts, we haven't made any progress forward in almost 20 years. And in fact, in the last 4 years, we've gone backwards. Our numbers are worse. So if we look at our progress in changing and closing the gender wage gap, we've done really nothing since the late 90s. That's just unacceptable. It should be unacceptable to everyone. It's certainly unacceptable to me. And so, that's why I'm working so hard to pass both of these pieces of legislation. It's something that I feel like is my life's work at this point. It's really important.
Well, let's talk about the push to make pay more transparent and equitable right here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, let's do it.
So talk to me about what took place today. Good friend, State Rep Josh Cutler, along with other representatives and senators were a part of this, Senator Feeney, Senator Moran, Senator Jalen. What was the conversation today? And what were some of the things that were discussed?
Yeah. So I represent now, and I'm individually working for this. As you know, I've been working on pay equity for a long time.
Yeah.
But I've now sort of joined forces with what we call the Wage Equity Now Coalition, which is a coalition of over 90 organizations, black, brown, Latina, Latino, business, labor, who've gotten together to work towards passing these two bills. So that is our entire function. Fantastically, the Boston Foundation has taken the coalition on and helped us from an organizational perspective. And today we held a legislative briefing about our two bills that we have in front of the legislature. So, and just to be, just make sure we're covering it. So there's two bills. They were both been filed in the House. They've both been filed in the Senate. The idea is that they have just been assigned to Labor and Workforce Committee and that they will be combined in the committee as they were combined last session. So they were voted out as one bill last session. It did not pass. We didn't get out of Senate Ways and Means. And so this year we're hoping that we're going to be able to pass it. One of the issues that we had last year was that we didn't have a strong enough support from the business community. We have made some alterations to the bills in connection with the business community. We've worked with one of the largest business organizations, not ready to say that, officially give their support, but we feel very confident in the next few weeks that we're going to get some very strong business support and out of our working with them to make this bill really even more business friendly than it was.
So what kind of modifications were made?
Okay.
Hoping that, in fact, this will be enticing enough for them to sign and go, yeah, this is something that we'll throw our support behind.
Exactly. So there are two pieces of legislation. We'll talk about each one. So there's a salary range transparency bill, and what that would require is that companies share the salary range when they're posting the job. This really hasn't had much business opposition because it is in companies' best interest to do this. The only reason why they don't currently do it is because it's considered a competitive disadvantage. So if I, as an example, as the owner of the recruiting company, were to share my base salaries for recruiters, then all my other competitors could just beat me out. By making it required, we've eliminated the competitive disadvantage for doing so. This is not a novel idea. This similar bill has been passed in at least 10 states and municipalities. It's on the books in 10 other states. This is something that we have to just do. It's an important step to sort of maintain the integrity of the interviewing and offering process. Okay, so that's part one. The second bill is a wage data bill. Originally, this wage data bill required that all companies share their EEO filings. So to not bore the listeners, an EEO filing is required of every company. It basically just lays out what your gender and wage gaps are, racial wage gaps are. You submit it to the federal government. That's it. It's a form you fill out. Everybody has to do it. Any company over 100 employees and all municipalities. Okay. We were all, the bill last year was also requiring that we share that bill with the state, and the state would publicly list those wage gaps online for individual companies. As you might imagine, we got some pushback on that.
Of course.
And, you know, as a business owner, I agreed with it, too. I don't, you know, nobody wants their dirty laundry aired out there, right? So we modified, in strong connection and collaboration with the business community, we've modified that bill. And so now what will happen is the information will be shared anonymously and be aggregated anonymously, so that all a company will get is to be able to see what is the average of those wage gaps in their industry. So if, as a recruiter, I'll know what my wage gaps are, and I'll be able to compare to the larger recruiting industry in Massachusetts. But the bigger picture on why this is important is we can't manage what we don't measure. And right now in Massachusetts, we don't have a solid handle on where our racial and wage gaps actually are. And so we need to start measuring that. We need to start looking at that. The data that gets sent to the federal government, states never see. So we don't ever get that information. It's the only place where it's being held. So we've made it really easy, because it's a form that companies are already filling out. We're just asking them to submit to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State will aggregate the data and just produce aggregate information. So it's benign in terms of business opposition.
So what else was discussed today during this session?
Yeah, so we ended up having some great speakers, very passionate. I'm going to talk about one. His name's Darian Johnson. He is policy advisor for BECMA, the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts. And, you know, one of the things he talked about, and I was actually really, I felt like gut punched when he said it, but he was talking about how in talking with Black and brown families in our state, how despondent the younger people are about living in successfully in Massachusetts, and that many of them, these are homegrown, these are Massachusetts born.
It's like it's a foregone conclusion for them?
That they don't see opportunity here.
So they need to go elsewhere.
They need
to
leave,
do that.
Right? So we already know Massachusetts is bleeding people, right? That's been happening for some time for a variety of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But it's really incredibly upsetting to know that a Black or brown family doesn't feel like their children have an opportunity here, right? That means we're losing not only transient people that might come and go out of Massachusetts, but people who are born here, you know. And what does that say about our state if we can't provide opportunities for all of our citizens to be successful, right? All of our citizens to have equity and justice. So it was really upsetting, but also just a new take on this, right? We always talk about we're losing people, and, you know, and that, but we're never talking about that people are leaving because they don't feel like there's opportunity. And so I think that, you know, again, just listening to the previous speakers, if you're just talking about the MBTA, right, and having programs that are equitable for our poor, you know, we need to do a better job. We really do. I think with this administration, with Governor Healey, whom I love to pieces, I think we have a real opportunity to make some pretty substantial, significant, and important change.
So after today's session, what's the next step? What does the WEN Coalition do next?
Yeah, so essentially we want as many co-sponsors as we can have to our two bills. I think I got over 50, maybe 60 for each of the House bills, maybe a dozen on the Senate side. If you are interested in this topic and you want to look up your legislator and you want to call them and tell them to support these wage transparency bills, that would be amazing. They actually just today, and I can look it up, you know, in a minute, were given their actual numbers. They have already been sent to Labor and Workforce. We're going to ask that they and advocate for them to be combined again. And then we're really hopeful that, especially with securing such strong business support, that this will be our session to pass this bill.
How important is it that you have a friend in Labor and Workforce, like a state representative, Josh Kyla, who's fighting for equity and justice for folks who, you know, want to earn a fair wage, and they want to be considered just like everybody else when it comes to being hired for a job?
Yeah, well, I want to also say, too, you know, Josh is a leader in this space, obviously, and has always been. But I also want to mention Pat O'Connor, Republican Pat O'Connor.
Indeed.
Who was the first Republican to sign on to both of our bills. We've secured other Republican bipartisan support since then, but he was definitely the first. He's actually always really been a staunch advocate for this. And so, you know, I really want to call him out specifically, too. Sue Moran Senator Moran was there today, too, you know, just there to cheer us on and say, you know, great job. So, you know, I think we've gotten, if you talk about the South Shore, we certainly have garnered, Kathy Lenatra signed on to the bill to be a co-sponsor. I mean, we have a strong support here on the South Shore, which I really...
The delegation's really good.
The delegation's really good. Yeah, we got some good people who are doing, they're working really hard. They're working really hard for the people who live here. They're listening, they're paying attention, and they're taking action. And that's really all you can ask of your elected officials, right? Mm. That they show up, they listen, they do things.
So these particular bills, House Bill 2814.
Yep.
Senate Bill 1521. There's also two others, 4039, House Bill 4039, and Senate Bill 2331. What can be done? I mean, you said this is... This is the third go-around, right?
Third go-around for both these bills.
Okay. And I think you've done enough to try to retool them or try to at least make them where they're going to be friendly. What is going to be acceptable? Because a lot of times it may make it through committee, but they may also take certain provisions out of it. What is acceptable when it comes to legislation like this?
Well, one of the things I think that's different this year than was last year is that we knew there was opposition from the business community for a very real reason and one that was legitimate, right? So we've made those changes. So we do not expect to have business opposition, which was the reason why it got killed last year, for being, you know, all fair and honest. So I think we're in a much better position. You know, one of the things that this is a very simple bill. There's not a lot to it. There's not a lot we can strip out of it, yep. Right? It's just requiring that companies share salary ranges, and it's just requiring that people send the same form they're already filling out to the state. This is not a heavy ask. This is not costing anyone any money. Yep. So this should be simple. But what I will say is that we're not prepared to take either of these off the table either, because the reason why we're in this situation of needing to have a salary range transparency bill where companies share salary ranges is because this part of the bill was stripped from the Equal Pay Act that was passed in 2016. And when it was stripped, it really made the Equal Pay Act not function properly, because the Equal Pay Act required that companies no longer ask what you're currently earning, right? Because then you'd base your salary on what someone was earning and not
on
the
teeth out of it, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then that instead of, because we didn't have that second part that was requiring companies share, that it was stripped out of there, share the salary range, what ended up happening is companies started asking, what are your salary expectations? So now that's the question that you ask in place of what are you currently earning? Well, that's a worse question.
Yeah.
Because men base it on what they're earning, and women and people of color base it on what they're earning, if they answer it. And then sometimes when they answer it, they just make the number up. And it's a lot more than what they were earning. And this is the reason, directly, that the Equal Pay Act passing, to be honest, is the reason why we have seen a step back, which is why women and people of color earn less today than before it was enacted. And it's because it didn't have that follow-up language of making sure that companies shared the salary ranges, so everybody knew what they were talking about when they were interviewing, right? So at this point, we can't strip anything out of it, because what we know now is that when we did that, you know, we sent ourselves backwards. And so if you look at most of the states that have passed any kind of pay equity bill, it has included the salary range transparency and requiring companies share salary ranges. And those that didn't pass it originally with their original language have gone back to pass that second piece to make sure that it was in there because of the issues it was creating for women and people of color and for businesses who are trying to maneuver their way through hiring someone without knowing what their salary was, with having a salary expectation answer, which is not real. It just kind of was a mess for everybody.
We just got a couple of moments left here, and there's a lot more that needs to be said. If folks who are tuned in right now want to keep up to speed with what's happening with the WEN Coalition and the fight for a transparency and wage equity, is there Facebook, social media, website, anything?
WageEquityNow.com is the website for the WEN Coalition. Everything's going to be updated through that. It's run and owned by the Boston Foundation. You can certainly reach out to me as well. You can find me online, Megan Driscoll, Facebook, you know, Twitter. I'm Wage Equity Now on Twitter at Wage Equity Now. And on LinkedIn, you know, I'm open and available to talk to anybody who's interested in the topic.
Let's keep in touch. And if there's any new developments, let's have you back in and give folks the lowdown on what's going on.
For sure.
She is Megan Driscoll. She is with the Wage Equity Now Coalition, the WEN Coalition. Been our guest. That's it. Hour number one in the books. But fear not, hour number two is ahead here on 95.9 WATD.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We are back for hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, we will speak with Corinne Mason. She's the director of Massasoit Theater Company's student ensemble of Little Women. And student actor and I think assistant director Devaney Grafton will be joining us after 7:30. Quick stop, commercial break. Right now, though, we talk a little Abington Copes. Joining us is Melissa Cook, Jeff Chasen, and the conversation is about their organization. These days, it's getting tougher and tougher as far as when it comes to finding help and assistance when it comes to substance abuse or as to educating folks. What's even more interesting is that COVID did not necessarily stop the need for folks to find assistance when it came to addiction. Melissa, Jeff, welcome back to the show because this isn't your first time.
Yeah, Kevin.
How are we doing?
Good evening.
For folks who don't know what Abington Copes is,
yes,
what is it?
First, thank you for having us.
Yep.
So Abington Copes is the Substance Use Coalition in Abington, of course. We stand for COPES, Community Outreach, Prevention, Education, and Support. So we got going about a year ago because we just kind of saw a need in our community. The previous Substance Use Coalition, like many of them, didn't kind of know what to do during COVID. And then I lost my sister April of 2021. So I was like, ready, let's go, let's do something. So here we are.
And what's the last time you were here, you were actually talking about a fundraiser. You did a 5K.
Yes.
To raise some funds.
Yes.
And you use that funding for awareness and gatherings. Yep. Well, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. The 5K, we took over the Jeff Koons Memorial Road Race. Yep. I shouldn't say took over. Two totally separate things. But
transitioned.
Yes, correct. We did it the same time, the same weekend about, and it was, I think it was super successful. We had almost 300 people register. It was just like a fun day. It was run really well. The Abington Police Department, you know, knew the deal already because the Jeff Koons had gone on for 20 years. So I had a lot of my family and friends come out and just a lot of people, you know, that were used to doing that race. Yeah, and it was just a fun day. We had food trucks, bouncies, and water, bananas, everything for the runners. We did, what do you call it?
We had a local DJ, DJ Scully.
Yep. And it was just, it was a fun day, and we raised some funds, so.
And I had a megahorn, too.
That was requested, wasn't it?
He abused it a little bit. Got on it a little too much. Used it too frequently, but
so as both of you being members of the board of directors, Melissa, you serving as president,
yes,
and I serve for doing outreach.
What have you done since that event? What has been going on, and how have you been welcomed by the community?
I've heard all encouraging things and people thanking us for doing what we do. So, yeah, we haven't received any pushback or anything, which where the stigma still exists, you would almost anticipate it, but we haven't had any. Since the 5K, we've had some resource table, outreach and resource tables at Oktoberfest, Christmas at the Grove. We've done a Narcan training with Rockland Cares at the Rockland High School football game. What else did we do?
Tell everyone about last week.
Oh, yes. We had No First Time come in.
John Green.
John Green lost his son, I believe, in 2015, Evan, to an overdose. And he paired up with Lieutenant Fanning from the state police and Pat Cronin, who owns, is that right, Emory Recovery Center?
Yep.
And so they come in and did, it was a parents' night. So it was, I was so stoked at how many people came out, parents with their teenagers. We had a handful of tweens there, sixth graders. A lot. I've been involved in PTO and whatnot for like 5-ish years. So some parents I did, but it was a lot of parents I didn't know too. So just so happy to see so many people come out. It was standing room only. We had one of the moms I know, she texted me the next day and said, thanks for bringing in No First Time. That my son had a lot of questions when we left. And then he said it probably changed his life. So that was like, it got me emotional because this is what it's about.
Change one life.
One life.
One life at a time.
Yeah.
Preserve one life.
Right.
At a time. So it sounds as though you're building on successful events.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
What's the word in regard to doing any, I mean, this is a form of outreach right here where you're kind of, you're on the radio. You've probably done TV shows. You've done different things to try to get the word out.
So our biggest obstacle has been getting the word out. Melissa touched on, you know, the fact that we haven't received any pushback or backlash, and that's amazing. But it took us a whole year to fill a pretty, you know, average-sized community room. You know, and that, to me, is a problem. And it's a problem that's reflective of the fact that there's not enough conversations in the community at the community level taking place about the problems of substance use disorder.
Why do you think that is?
Maybe it's still stigma. You know, maybe it's people afraid of what their neighbors or their colleagues or you know.
Denial.
Maybe it's denial as well.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of fear.
Maybe we're sitting around waiting for the politicians to save us still, you know? But little do they know their constituents care about this problem because they're not telling their representatives that they care about this problem. So, you know, I think if we can spark more conversations at the community level and then bring some organized feedback, you know, to the politicians, I think they'll listen to their constituents. They want to get reelected. That's how the wheel turns. You know, the people have the power, right?
Right.
But they're not hearing us because we're not getting in their faces enough. I don't know. You know, I don't pretend to major in political science, but you know, I know something needs to happen.
Another thing too, I think, is that we're a small town. So someone sees someone at something, and they talk to this parent, and that parent talks to that person. So just that they don't want everybody to find out that their family's dealing with this issue. And that's why I always try to remain vocal about my sister. I lost my sister to an overdose. So, like, yep, it could happen to anyone.
Is it easy for you to say that you lost? I mean, how long did it take you to voice it and say it? I mean,
the next day. Like, we wrote it in her obituary because we, you know, we had thought for years, like, one day we're going to be writing her obituary, and are we going to say it? And we knew the answer was yes. So it didn't. I knew it was the right thing for us to do is to say in her obituary, she succumbed to her battle of addiction.
And thank God, Melissa, you had, you know, people in your life and you know, surrounding you that, you know, empowered you and supported you through that. A ton of people don't, you know, or they just don't know who to turn to. And that's a huge area where we can be a voice in our community, right?
For sure.
It's the lived experience, because it's scary to talk to someone who might not understand. But if that person knows the person they're going to has lived the same horror, it's going to be that much easier to open up and share that.
Well, it's getting worse with today's drugs. It's no longer just heroin. It's no longer just cocaine.
I don't even think heroin exists anymore.
No, it's cocaine.
Cocaine's certainly on its way out with synthetic stuff being made.
Yeah, colorful fentanyl or something that's, you know, you touch it, it's going to affect you. And, you know, so much so that we hear stories, we see news stories about, you know, law enforcement, you know, pulling a vehicle over and obviously, you know, law enforcement getting affected because they touched tainted, you know,
transdermal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's something that's absorbed through the skin and it, you know, can kill you.
It's terrifying, you know, and
all for a high.
Yeah. All for a craving beyond somebody's, you know, physical and mental control.
Right. And some folks don't understand that.
Right.
You know, and that I think, you know, society doesn't realize that is. And I think everybody has had somebody in their life, more than one or two people, who have battled with addiction, with substance abuse. And it doesn't have to be just a drug. It could be alcohol.
Yep.
It could be food. It could be, I mean, we all succumb to certain addictions.
The phone.
You know.
And a lot of people, you know, they look at the opioid numbers, right? And they're terrifying. They're horrific. They've seemingly gotten worse annually. You know, there might have been a couple of years where they kind of held in place, but coming out of COVID, they've you know, skyrocketed. Enough people aren't talking about the ER visits related to, you know, alcohol use and how those have also skyrocketed. That the leading cause of death right now for men between the ages of 18 and 45 is accidental overdose. Did you know that? You know, a lot of people don't. And again, you know, until that, you know, almost outrage gets sparked at the community level, these are things we're just going to be throwing spaghetti at the wall to see if it sticks, you know. You know, I think that was the wrong analogy, but
no, but
get my point.
I do get your point. But I mean, is it a saving grace that Narcan is something that they can assist with bringing somebody back?
It is, and we've covered amazing ground with how readily accessible Narcan is, how many purses, you know, glove boxes, even though they're not supposed to be there on hot days, you know, but. Props to you for carrying it, you know, it's out there, right? And it's getting circulated and it's easier to get.
Still, I feel like we still need to push that and work on that still, because not enough people have it.
Correct.
And not enough people even know what Narcan is. So we have another training coming up with Rockland Cares at a lacrosse game, but that's something we're going to continue to help get out there.
Do you find yourselves working, your Abington Copes, teaming up with other like-minded organizations like
Rockland Cares
or maybe E.B. Hope or, you know, Whitman Hansen Will or whomever, you know, Brockton has an opioid coalition.
Yep. Rockland Cares is like a easy one for me. I'm from Rockland, and then the president of Rockland Cares, Stacy Gardner, she lost her brother to an overdose on the same day I lost my sister, same date, except 4 years earlier. So we've had like an instant connection, and so it's easy for me to, you know, hook up with Rockland Cares. But yeah, we hope to continue to build relationships with different organizations, you know, in the South Shore. So,
and if you're an organization, please visit our website and email us at abingtoncopes@gmail.com.
Website abingtoncopes.org, Facebook, Instagram. And Instagram. Yeah. Yep. Abington Copes.
Now, you, to digress back to the meetings, so does it seem like you're building numbers with your community? Because you meet monthly, right?
Monthly, yep. The second Wednesday of every month at the police the community room in the police station at 6 o'clock. It's funny
Listen. Okay. People of Abington and the surrounding communities that care about this topic and want to get involved. It's one meeting a month for 40 minutes. And there's amazing cookies, and there's amazing people waiting to connect with you. It's not this overwhelming
thing.
No pressure. No one's going to make you talk. No one's going to say, "Hey, what are you doing here? Why are you here? Are you a drug addict? Do you know? Is your brother a drug addict?" You know, no one. We're all.
But you hear compelling. Have you? And since you've been holding meetings, have you been hearing compelling stories? Are you hearing from folks who, they wanted to make their way to your meeting because they were seeking something?
Yeah, I do have to say, Wednesday night I have a friend who lost his daughter just a few weeks before I lost my sister, and his wife came to the meeting, and she said said, "Okay, I'm ready." She goes, "It's been 2 years." She said, "I want to be a part of now. I'm ready." So,
That's
everybody.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and I have heard from a couple people since then. It really let the community know, what we're about, what we're trying to accomplish. So I expect, to just, as we get going, get out there in the community, I do expect, some more people to trickle in.
Now, is there a plan as far as any educational pieces that you'd like to do with the public schools?
Well, so we actually have Sullivan's Message coming in next Monday to talk to the juniors, and that is going to be super amazing. We worked hard to book her. We are going to talk about No First Time coming into the middle school, because that mom said, "I think they need to come talk to our middle schoolers, so the kids know about it before it gets presented to them by a peer." But one thing I did want to kind of touch upon is I am not a prevention specialist. I am one parent, knowing that we need to educate our kids and everything. So I need more parents who want to help educate our kids and everything. So again, our meetings, or just reach out to me. We don't, if we want to do something after school, if you want to do a phone call with me, something, but it can't, I'm not a prevention specialist.
Have you each had that where you've had somebody reach out to you, somebody who's in need, or somebody who was, a family member, someone who was in need or in crisis, Jeff?
Literally, yes. And I don't want to alienate them too much.
No, don't.
But through generous donations that have been made, someone very close and near and dear to me was able to enter into a sober home in Abington called Limitless Recovery to start again, to have another chance. And that was a little over a month ago. And
yeah,
he's been doing well. He's making a good beginning.
And someone just reached out to us, another individual, and we were able to support him a little bit too. So, that's, that was a big deal to me to be able to have the money to be able to do that.
What does it mean to you to be able to help people, knowing that you lost a loved one,
yep,
and that you both are working on behalf of hopefully being able to save one person at a time?
Yes.
From something fatal.
Right. What does it mean? That's last March when we got going. That was I kept saying, Ryan, our vice president, I've talked with him a lot over this last year. Mm. He's listened to me a lot. And I kept saying, "Well, we haven't even helped anyone yet. I haven't even helped anyone yet." And so it's now it's happening. We've been able to provide financial assistance for two people. That sixth grader said it probably changed my life. So now, the fruits of the labor is coming. So, yeah.
Yeah, prevention starts with education. If the education piece isn't there, if it isn't happening, people are just going to keep doing what they do at the age that they do it at. And we're going to keep seeing the same problems in society that we've always seen, right?
Where do you each individually feel as though that if it was a target age that society, when it comes to society, we need to start focusing on whether it's the, you know, grade six, grade five, is it grade four?
So we're going to give two probably different answers.
Yep. That's
from,
fine.
From two very different perspectives.
One's
that
from
I think
Abington.
I'm not looking for hive mind here. If that helps
yeah.
you.
Well, you're coming from a parent of children of age
in
you
know,
approaching in
yeah,
Abington.
Knowing what's going on.
And I'm,
in the
and I'm
community.
Coming from a point of having struggled with substance use at a yep. young age. Yeah.
Right.
So let's hear it.
Okay.
You first.
So for Abington, I think a lot of the problem we're having with our kids is the edibles, the gummies and all the marijuana products and the vaping. And that's starting 7th and 8th grade. So I think from, you know, I've talked it over with moms. We need to get to our 5th, 6th graders.
Interesting. Jeff?
Yeah.
That's literally the same age I was going to say, fifth and sixth grade, or fourth,
or
fifth.
Fourth,
you
yeah.
know, fourth,
yeah.
fifth. I would lean to earlier. I don't think you're
right.
going to make a child curious to use drugs in the process of educating them on what they are. Mm. And I think there's a difference between educating them and, like, the 60s, 70s, 80s, like, trying to scare, yeah. you know?
Sure.
Like, oh, if you smoke marijuana, you're brain will explode and you'll jump out a window, you know, or something crazy like that. You know, educate. And I think the most, as a parent, you know, and thinking about what I'm going to be saying to my son in a few years, the best thing I've seen and heard kind of, you know, disseminated as that first conversation is to focus on the point of brain development, and that our brains don't stop developing until about the time we turn 21.
Right.
And that's why the legal age for drinking alcohol is 21. And that's why they set the legal age of cannabis use at 21 as well.
It's actually 25.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, I don't
shows
mean
how,
to correct.
Shows how educated I am.
No, I don't mean to correct. And believe it or not, males, it's even later than 25.
Sure.
And, sorry, I just
And yeah. it makes a lot of sense when you look at it from the scientific standpoint instead
right.
of from this, you know, do as I say, not as I do yep. for a lot of parents, or, you know, left to my own devices, I would probably try and scare my kid too, talking about
yeah.
all the crap
yeah.
and terrible stuff that I went through. And then he's going to think of, you know, my son's going to think about his dad going through that stuff, you know, at a young age, when instead I could just focus on trying to educate him on the science.
Talk, have conversations early and often.
Early and
best.
Often, yeah.
And again, we're speaking with Jeff Chase and Melissa Cook there with Abington Copes. They're on the board of directors. And they are realizing 1 year as the board of directors, as they've been, you know, trying to do their best to get the word out. If you look ahead to a year from now or 5 years from now, who do you hope Abdi Copes is at, you know, at said stage, again, a year yeah. from now or beyond?
I know a kind of a goal of, I think we've all talked about with Abington Copes, is to have some kind of sober housing for women in Abington. That's
in honor yeah. of your
sister.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. What about you, Jeff?
I mean, I help people, you know, professionally for a living. I own, you know, a treatment center. I've worked in this field for, you know, approaching six years now, and it's something that I need to have an outlet that's, you know, altruistic, or that, you know, I'm not getting a paycheck for, or, you know, compensated for, that I'm volunteering my time, volunteering my energy. So knowing that I'm always going to need that in my life, you know, I always want to be involved with, you know, with something like Abington Copes. I would love to see Copes grow to you know, maybe unite all
with,
of these
other
coalitions or something. Yeah,
make,
you know, regionals
too.
And you know, I think the more numbers we have, you know, addressing these things, that the more, you know, success we're going to have at making an impact.
If you will, please give the either a website or email address again
yep.
that folks want to reach out to.
AbingtonCopes@gmail.com and then AbingtonCopes.org for the website.
I want to thank you both for coming in and keep us up to speed. If you have any events or anything notable that we could share with our audience?
Parade Sunday.
Oh, yeah, the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
In Abington.
Yeah, yep. We're having...
It's one of the best on the South Shore.
Yep, huge parade. So we'll be on there. Abington Cope's banner will be on Mac Towing's tow truck. And, yeah, we're going to have a bunch of kids on there, and we're going to be handing some stuff out. So, yes.
Excellent. Well, getting the word out and helping those who need help, Abington Cope's. Well, thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Kevin.
You got it. We are going to step aside... And the final segment of Monday Night Talk is on deck. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, Tiny, I got a testimonial here from Trisha Malloy. She says, thank you so much for getting the Jeep windshield in so quickly. We were heading to our annual Jimmy Buffett concert weekend when, pop, a rock breaks the windshield. PETA was right on it.
You embarrass me with praise. My boys would have done a good job even if it were a Barry Manilow weekend. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. Actually, I kind of like Barry Manilow.
You do?
My wife likes Barry Manilow. That's why I like Barry Manilow.
Smart man.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Saturdays following the 12 o'clock news, join Arthur Boyle and Zach Clapp on The Boiling Point as they try to make sense out of what goes on around us. Sponsored in part by Pembroke Collision and other fine folks in the community. Set your dial to 95.9 FM WATD for The Boiling Point. See you on Saturday.
The Boiling Point with Arthur Boyle and Zach Clapp. Saturdays, 12:15 to 1 on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Joining me for a segment. I don't know how you get it so quickly back from the part of the state. State Representative Kathy Lenatra.
Great to be here, Kevin. I did do the speed limit, yes.
Did you?
Yes, I was at UMass Amherst.
What was that like?
It was fantastic. So we're doing, as you know, I'm on the way committee, and we are doing things across the Commonwealth. So this one, UMass Amherst, and I was joined by my colleague, Rep. Matt Muratori, Rep. Steve, and Representative Allison Sullivan.
Quite the South Shore contingency being this Ways and Means Committee.
I know, it's wonderful. It was wonderful. I was a Democrat in the car today.
Folks didn't know that. Some folks didn't know that, but I think those who do the show and hear things, most recently, Steve Agus and yes. Matt Muratori, mm-hmm. they would love, you guys don't necessarily kind of
tell no, we don't.
Political
no.
parties.
We don't, because we work together really well for the best for our...
So we have a special segment here to close as a Massasoit Community College later this week, this weekend, is going to be putting on Little Women. Quite appropriate. Joining me is two folks who are going to talk about it. First is a good friend. He is also, I believe, the director of this production. We have Corinne Mason.
Thank you so much. I am really excited here and to get to spend time with you again.
You are like bubbling with enthusiasm.
Always. It's kind of a flaw.
Bad thing.
Not a bad thing at all.
Now, joining us also is Devaney Grafton. She's serving in multiple roles, correct?
Yes. I'm playing Mr. John Brook as well as I am the assistant director for it.
Wow. That's pretty cool. The first thing I have to say to the three of you is a little bit about it. Know that we have just celebrated International Women's Day, at least, and I know that Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. Was this performance chosen, or is it just kind of a coincidence?
It is a beautiful coincidence. Not specifically, but we are at Massasoit honoring Herstory this year. So we have chosen a lot of plays in classes and asked to explore female plays, female stories, and like unrecognized voices, and voices that are recognized them in a completely new way.
Can we talk a little bit about this, of how far women have come and how much things need to go? We can either go with Devaney or we can go with Kathy Lanatra.
Well, I'll you know, we do, women have come along with that, but, you know, we still only make 80 cents a dollar. We're 53% of the workforce now. We're 52% of the college population. So there's some work to be done.
Absolutely. I have to agree with all. Everything is just see how far we have come, especially looking into Little Women. I am a little bit of a dramaturge and looking into the history of why things are the way they're in plays as well as in the book and going through everything, seeing how different it all has been from reading the book to how we are doing. It's so exciting.
If I was to ask each of you, and then again, of course, here, but you know what? I want to make sure that we're paying homage to women, all of the fantastic, not only here in Massachusetts, the country. Who would you say would be a hero of yours when it comes to women? And maybe things that have been, like, it could be your mom, it could be, it doesn't matter, but somebody who you look up to and idolize it as a woman, and somebody who has always been there, and maybe they might be somebody who is a leader of stakeholders or communities. Corinne?
Happy to start. Definitely my most, I think, without mentioning, she's an absolute hero and a matriarch and a bee. But my hero is Anne Bogart. And she is a director at the City Company in New York City. And she, no matter what, is the pushing the boundaries of creating art, what she thought art, and how to share new and innovative ideas well. And she really lay for female directors and directors who work in the same field, which I call physical theater or devised. And she came up against some hardship in her career, but always pushed through. She's always been grounded and innovative, and I just love her. So, yeah, I want to be her. Don't tell her.
Okay. We won't tell her.
Darcy.
Devaney?
So have to say my mom, because she's my mom, been through thick and thin with me. But also my cousin. I lived with her up until I was old, and she has spinal muscular atrophy, which means that over time she has a lot of mobility in her limb, can't really move anymore. She is going so strong. She's 23 this year, and I think it is absolutely crazy how much I get to see her and just things she's been doing. She's about college in, I should know her major, a science one, which is probably why I don't it specifically. And if she'll kill me, but it's fine. Most importantly, recently, I have to be Mason.
Oh, no.
Oh. I came to Soyet solely for acting. I was like, I want to be on stage. I want to do this. And her teach and all of her methods shows me that something I love is helping other people find their potential, as with me.
If you had anything that you have gained from being around Corinne, what else?
Just her positive energy. She is one of the most positive people. Even when she is having the day ever and hating life, she is smiling and she is offering snacks and a place to lie down.
I am clean.
Wait. All right, so yeah. Top snacks. What are your top snacks, Corinne?
Blue bears and goldfish, I think, or it's Krispy Treats. Oh, those are also very popular. Very
good. Yeah. All right, good to know. Representative Lynette?
You're putting me on the spot because there's just so many. There's so many. I do think I have the bravest daughter and bravest mother. And, just, you know, in my career along the way, when I owned the bridal shop, I wanted to be the Yolanda of the South Shore. Yolanda from Waltham. I wanted to South Shore, and I strived to be as excellent as she was. In the legislature, I have, you know, Terry Murray really has paved the way. Claire, the U.S. ambassador to Ireland. So there's been so many women that have turned me a hand up along my life. Can't just name one. I mean, just, I like to surround myself women that like to help other women, and I have done. Hopefully I'll be doing that to other women, and I hope my daughter does.
Fantastic. And again, if you're just tuned into Monday Night Talk, and we are talking a little bit about the upcoming moments this coming Saturday of women, and there's actually a matinee and an evening show this coming Saturday. For folks who don't know, what is Little Women about?
In one word, Little is about family, but it's about the family that you're born, but also chosen family, which this really spoke to us a particular year, you know, as we're building stories that we want audiences, what do they want to see? And so a particular play follows the story of March and her three sisters, Beth, Meg, and Amy, and their mother and their father, as well as their quirky but neighbors. And it's a piece about finding solidarity and supporting each other, family, no matter what it is you're going through. And Jo is a literon for a lot of young girls because she wanted to be a writer in a where that was unacceptable. But most people don't know is Jo wanted a writer, but Meg was an extraordinary dancer, and Beth played the piano, and Amy was an artist that traveled the world and studied art in Paris. And so the March parents really encouraged their young girls to be everything that they wanted to be, despite what society restrictions put on them.
So ask you, Devaney, what is it about this, you know, this particular show that you've learned about or like to be a part of this cast? Is this first time being a part of a cast, first time of many, and different?
This is second college level performance in high school, and it's a very different environment. I find this one way exciting. But to Corinne, this story really is about family, which in our theater as well, everyone in the cast, I with my entire heart, even of them annoy me sometimes. It happens, you know,
it's family.
We
it's
spend
family.
A ton of time together. It's family. I would die for any of those people in that room. To add on to her previous, I love the history behind it. Like I actually own Bronson Alcott, who is Louisa May's father, and she is the author of Little Women. I have a copy of his book, The Magic Teaching. And I love looking and just seeing how this to the play as well, like seeing how the fathers line up with the things that he teaches. And it's a strict father who's off to war. It's of his daughters dearly and allows them to encourage their freedom in a time where they didn't have any.
I know I'm kind of hogging up the microphone here. Representative, is this something that you ask of our guests?
Well, because it is my favorite book of all time.
Yay!
I have seen three that have been out. There may be four, but I've seen three. And I'm really looking forward to coming on Saturday. I like a good matinee. I bed by 9.
Me too.
So a matinee good, and I can have a little dinner afterwards, bring along my daughter. Mm. So it is just fabulous to meet you, and I cannot wait to see it.
Oh, we can't wait for
I
you.
I know, it's so exciting.
Let's talk the ambiance of Massasoit and Buckley Performing Arts Center. How is it different from anywhere else that you've been? You've been on stage or direct, Corinne?
I have to say that my teammate at Massasoit, Mark Rocheteau, when I first got the job as full-time theater faculty, the two of us sat down and we read, what do we want this program like? Because theater is academic. You have to learn theory, but practice. And we only have them for, you know, 2 to 3 years, a little longer if we're lucky, 2 to 3 years. And so what we're able to give people in a short amount of time that prepares them for the profession. And so we drive those opportunities home. We performance opportunities as well as bringing in guest artists to do masses. And so we listen to our students and we have a committee, we call it the Democratic Theater Arts Program. So if they're interested in thing, you know, Mark is the first one, hey, how can we get it done and work together to make sure the students have what they want? Because ultimately they pay for their education and our facility is extraordinary. You know, we have 2 theaters back and over 400 seats and, you know, everything can always use a little bit, but for them to have the opportunity to perform on a real stage, always a blessing because sometimes college students are performing in class.
And so this is, you know, sometimes confuse the two that there is the theater company, mm-hmm. But this is something that's being put on by the student ensemble. Am I correct?
Yes. I believe that for the Massasoit Theater Company, they did a Christmas tour. Mm-hmm. And I believe they are working on Halley's Comet next.
Correct.
That's coming on right after Little. For this one is mostly student-led, as well as, of course, correct. And
course.
It's very different. I've only done high school theater before. And in a place that didn't stage, it was an auditorium where we were even 1 foot away was crazy. And how we're doing the same kind of thing there is, but it's being built and watching it life before my own eyes is exhilarating.
And we might want to give a shout out to the individual who is the technical director.
Oh yeah. Nate Ogg. He's a rock star. Oh my God. Anything.
It's incredible because at Abington High School, just got done with Carrie.
Oh.
And he was instrumental with like someone who is a veteran theater, whether he's directed somebody who builds a set and somehow punch doors in the middle of it, or doing lighting. He knows it from stern. So it's got to be a valuable type of thing to have. If Nathan is listening to this, I hope that you can get your head out the door to get going on later on tomorrow morning. But about having a Nathan and assistance building and understanding theater, how important is that?
Absolutely. It is really important, you know, especially on a level that we're trying to produce theater. You know, it's like it's professional. You know, sometimes we call the program pre-professional. But the quality is so high. You know, Nathan is extraordinary at what he does. Mark is an extraordinary leader, and his skill set is so strong. Their producing is the same level you would see if you went into Boston to see an Equity production. So obviously, a ginormous blessing for our students. But aside from that, they're also great people. You know, the creative ideas stop flowing, and they want what's best for students. They want what's best for the production. They're always coming up with new ways and new ideas for us to push forward and be where the day yesterday. And that, at the end of the day, is the quality that you theater artists, because art changes. We're not doing the same thing we were doing a year ago, 3 years ago, and we won't be doing the same thing this year. And so you need people with friends, and Nathan has that fresh mind, and he hires, you know, people to work alongside him that know what they're doing. So it's an incredible environment.
So it sounds like it's constantly evolving, right? You're always evolving. Sounds like a family.
Mm-hmm.
Devaney
Absolutely.
Says it's like all a family, and you're together for sometimes 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then after the years, do most of your students go on to a four-year school? Do you do after they leave you?
So mixed bag. So sometimes they do go on to four schools. We have students who have gone off to Emerson, Salem State, UMass mm-hmm. Boston, Bridgewater, and continued to pursue theater beyond. We also have some alumni who have just strayed into the business. Some take in the film world. Few years that we line that nobody really likes to mention was a bit back for us, because theater's a practical art. And so we had a batch of students come through last fall, and we're excited to see what that means for the future for them, and also for, you know, those 4 years. We'll be very lucky to get them.
Yes. It was a tough
stretch.
Yeah. Still feel, you know.
So I'm going to ask Devaney, here we are. We are in the cusp of tech.
Yes.
And the tech week is we're all coming together, and you know, you're getting your costume, adjusting lighting, anticipate for Tech Leap. Again, this being the second production that you're doing.
I anticipate standing in place for a very long time to get lighting right. But luckily, my costume is amazing. Stand in it all day because it was made beautiful. Even as hot as my cloak, it is beautiful. Seeing how it fits with
it. You know, it's funny. It just dawned that who's doing costume designs?
The irreplaceable Teresa Cappuccioni.
Oh my God!
But in her own right, talk about a look up to, right? You know, she's an icon in our community.
A little known fact that she actually did Gypsy.
Yes, she did.
She did.
Costumes, or she was?
She was on stage.
Yes.
And she was phenomenal.
Wow. No doubt.
And heads up a school that puts out some fantastic.
And the school continues to evolve. You know, they're working on renovations. She just loves the arts and is compassionate as well. So
it sounds like an all-star team. Anybody who knows anything about theater, especially here on the South.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you got a manager of this, you know, this conglomerate, of course, who is he was not able to be here in conversation. He also wanted to make sure that we had enough minds for the conversation.
Always thinking ahead, that guy.
But he's the producer. Nathan, I mean, how much confidence does that give you, knowing that you have so many years of experience with, you know, creating the costumes, pieces, because this is something that takes place in the Civil War, right?
Oh, yeah.
Having Nathan, who's building this at... And the heck he's doing.
Yep. We also have Valancourt is doing the lighting design. And, you know, he is currently in designing all over the country. And he's in our lights. And John Scott is doing the sound design. And he's an all-star student at Dean and the director at Massasoit. So, the whole entire... Dale Gilman is doing props. I'm like, don't forget anybody. I'll be completely honest and blunt. Like, not everything is completely finished. And sometimes people get sick or there's weather. we got a couple of days. And so when you work college level, those are the types of mm-hmm. things you have to work. But under no circumstances am I right. Because this team does incredible work and they hustle and they love what they do. And I can't wait to see all of the little details. You know, they do better than I can do it. So I have to trust them. And I love their work.
So as somebody, an instructor, somebody who is the director, what's it like to kind of watch this process as somebody who seems as though a lover, whether it's, yeah. you know, working with Carol or some of the other names we've just mentioned, to kind of be the person who's in and watching this as it all, it's a student of theater.
So meeting Corinne, I to what it was like to be a director, because something that I always had a minor in. And Corinne directs nothing like any director I have ever heard.
I feel really? So awkward.
No, it's so much more exciting. You allow team to decide what they want to do. If it works, then we can try it.
Thank you.
It's so exciting. So it knows that even if my idea doesn't work, they're considerate of it. And she's look at something first, unless it's a really bad idea. And I've had a few. It happens.
Are you kidding? They're not all winners.
That's how we learn.
Yeah.
But I do want, I am not the only assistant director. There's another one, Lauren Vanderwater, would be absolutely atrocious without she.
Very fair.
She's the maid. Okay. And she is not only made in the show, but she is every go-to person just in the cast. She is also a ball, and she is always prepared doing good. Movement. She is advising everyone else is blocking other than her own, and she is always your go-to person.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think performance needs someone like that.
Our students, they're just so great. I'm spoiled.
They're evolving.
As a job, and they all do it very well.
Yes.
Knowing that you only have the one day and the two performances. No. I'm just saying, is it a part of me? Part, I wish we could have maybe a Friday night, maybe a Saturday matinee. Was it about maybe extending it or saying, no, let's keep it to this?
Every time. We all have discussions about how we can do more. Particular production, the spring for the student ensemble, is meant to be an educational outreach piece. And so normally do four school shows during, and then they have a weekend of publicists. So they would have had many more, obviously, from the remnants of the restrictions, which like just did like this week. from the remnants of that, we weren't able all of those out. But we do have us coming on Friday afternoon, 200 young people who are getting a chance to see the magic of Little Women. That's another reason why we do this. These kids see their first play with professional quality. We'll get next year.
Kathy, you want to ask another question as we answer?
So what grades do you know?
I do know they're elementary school. I'm not sure which one specifically, but I think it's the elementary school kids.
Which is perfect. And they have a love for the theater, right? Love for theater. Just seeing that. I think that's fantastic.
It's kind of odd, but I just got a text message that they're going to be in grade six students.
Grade six. Wow, perfect. Perfect age for this book, for this play. Women, I think it's a perfect age.
So as we're wrapping up here, is there anything else that we want to make sure we, in regards to, let's again make sure we let folks know that we are speaking with Corinne Mason and Devaney Grafton. Thank you. I almost said another name. No, that's not her last name. And I don't have it. And I was actually looking on my notes to see your name on down. So
that's okay.
It's part of error here. But this is this coming Saturday at the Buckland Performing Arts Center at Sawyer Community College. Now, this is the general public. Again, the 18th and 7 p.m. What is time? Do we have a
the runtime right now is in 20 minutes with no intermission. It's a one act.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, like a movie.
No, if you go
so
ahead.
Affordable. $16 or $14 for seniors, students, and children and veterans.
Yep.
I mean, that is affordable to see this.
If you want to get tickets, go online, massasoit.ed/boxoff, or you can call the magic number. 427, ready for this? 234. It's that easy, 234. So, again, looking for something fantastic to do, whether it's nay or to go to the evening show, I would strongly suggest, as I know that Corinne has been a longtime professor there, also somebody who has directed Break a Leg.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say as we wrap and as we close out?
I do, yeah. Story of Little Women is obviously well-known and very Googleable. so chances are you will know what it's about. But I do have to say that our production is really unique. And it is filled with amount of joy, playfulness, and movement. And we really to embellish on the artistry for girls. And the and so if you're looking for something that is uplifting, I highly recommend coming to see Little Women.
Do you have any?
I agree. Everyone who thinks about Little Women thinks it's Joe March's story, and the story, it really is about all four of them. And everyone starts with a stereotype. As you watch it, you'll see that they are not who start them as. And it's in just in like less than an hour and a half, them grow into all new characters.
Now, is this your first? Now, is this your first without music, or have you, or are you two like doing musical?
I have never done a musical. I want to so badly. I have not done one yet.
Are you like a sneaky triple?
Yes.
Is she?
I'm answering. She is a sneaky triple threat.
Yeah. I'm learning. I'm like a half threat right now, but I'm getting there.
Well, I want to thank. I mean, representative. Thank you for. Finding your way here safely.
Well, for having me. And it's so, you both of you are pure joy. Can I say it? Pure joy.
So are you.
Right, so thank you for coming in.
I'm going to tear up. It's time for us to go. Ladies, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And again, it was open if you have other upcoming performances, especially Massasoit Student Humble, right? Get the word out about the Student Humbles, as well as the theater company that usually do the rounds, but awesome. Equally awesome. So. Representative.
Imagine turn your disastrous dental condition into a success story in as little as one day. I'm Dr. Andy Wehmeyer of Contemporary Prosthodontics. We're specialists in dental implants and reconstruction, including the all-on-4 implant procedure. Every part of your treatment can be done in-house, allowing us to perform complex dental treatments easily. This makes Contemporary Prosthodontics unlike any other practice you've been to. Call today for a consultation and find out what's possible. 781-934-2300 or find us at contemporarypro.com.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Closing out the show note, I want to take time to thank all of tonight's guests, starting from Raina Camacho and Kalik Williams. Raina, of course, who is with Coalition for Social Justice, Kalik Williams, Community Labor United, as they are working to try to find some equitable, affordable, and safe, reliable transportation for folks who do not necessarily have the funding, helping those who are in low-income communities. As we heard the conversation earlier tonight, the idea here is that there is legislation in the works, and it can only benefit those in need. And of course, not only with what Raina and Kalik's message, but with Megan Driscoll. These two segments this evening focus in on helping those in need or provide transparency and equitable means when it comes to how women are paid and that it's fair. And as we talked about earlier in the show, the concept is to be able to reach out to your representatives. Whether it's a state rep, a state senator, get involved. We can only make change if we work together. But I wanted to thank Raina, Kalik, and Megan Driscoll for coming in this evening and discussing some of these issues that you may not necessarily read in your local newspaper or the Boston newspaper. It may only be a sound cut that you hear on the news. But the idea of Monday Night Talk is to try to give you a little depth to what's going on and maybe have these individuals come in with updates. You know, again, we're striving to try to be the best conversation, not only here at 95.9 WATD, but on the radio dial, because it's something that is definitely lacking. Corinne Mason and Devaney Grafton, as well as Melissa Cook and Jeff Chasen, also want to thank them for joining us this evening. And also the common thread was talking about Women's History Month and recognizing that, you know, again, that those who champion things in our lives are women. And so the idea was to have this segment this evening, at least it be something that was part of our conversation with each segment. I look to you, my audience, for any kind of insight
for future guests. How can you do that? MondayNightTalk@gmail.com. Now, a lot of times I come up with these guests. We book these guests. We've been doing this for well over 12 years, and we hope we can do it for maybe another 12 years, as long as the microphone is here and the radio station remains here in Marshfield. We look forward to talking to you again next week at 6:15 p.m. But again, MondayNightTalk@gmail.com, and we should have the podcast site up to date by the end of the week. So if you missed out on any podcast or any conversations, you definitely can download them and check them out. I want to thank Larry Nelson, my producer. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.